That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
And we'd like to welcome everybody back to the Football is Family podcast. And I've got a special guest today to talk about a subject that is probably near and dear to everyone's heart here. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Rich Podolsky. I wrote a book called Madden and Summerall, How They Revolutionized NFL Broadcasting. And I worked with them at CBS Sports back in the 70s and the 80s. It was not only a pleasure to work with them, it was an incredible journey. I knew John Madden even before he got into broadcasting when he was a coach with the Oakland Raiders. I was covering the Miami Dolphins down in Florida. And soon after that, I was part of a show called The Superstars. And John came on that show with some of his team. We got to be very friendly that week in Hawaii. And when he came to CBS in 1979, I was about the only one he knew. So I took him around New York. We went to a place called Runyon's, which was a sports media hangout. We watched Monday Night Football. We were joined by Jimmy the Greek. And John was just a joy to be with. He was the guy that we all got to know, the fun-loving coach with the sound effects. In those days, he was like that, off out of the booth. And it took him until his third year to really get that style in the booth.
He, when I grew up watching football, I don't remember a whole lot of people who were commentators, but to me, Madden and Summerall were the ones that I remember. And of course, NFL in the 80s and 90s were big, but it wasn't like it is now where you can get every game that you can get, you know, Sunday's ticket. What I remember most about that is that if those two were on, and it was a nationally broadcast thing, that was the big deal. CBS especially. I believe they did it with Fox as well in the 90s. But CBS, and I remember how Summerall was this smooth, buttery sounding guy who knew how to deal with it. And Madden was the guy that was every man, that he added the sound effects, that he added the personal stories to it. That when I read about him, that people thought, well, he'll go back into coaching after that. He never really wanted to, for what I understood. He liked what he was doing. Is that about right?
You got that right, Jeremy. Madden really enjoyed broadcasting, and he wasn't so sure he would in the beginning. In fact, when CBS offered him a job in 1979, sort of on a tryout basis, they offered him four or five games, and he told his friends nearby and around him that he didn't have much respect for broadcasters, that he called them a bunch of hairdos. He hated Howard Cosell. He thought many of the guys were unprepared and didn't do their work, and they certainly didn't know the players or the coaches or the strategy. So he wasn't so sure he wanted to go into broadcasting. And the agent from IMG, Barry Frank, said, CBS wants you, and they'll give you 4 or 5 games. And he said, I don't know, maybe in a few years. And Barry Frank said to him, you know, in a few years, they might not want you. Because other guys will have retired and they might want them instead. And Madden thought about it and said, okay, I'll give it a try. And by the time he did his second game, he knew that was what he wanted to do to stay in football. He didn't want to be a coach again. He didn't want to be a general manager. He didn't want to be a scout. He wanted to be a broadcaster. And he had this unique ability after a few years to capture the mannerisms of the players, their slang, their essence. And he could also coach both teams from the broadcast booth better than they were being coached on the field.
I've always wondered, and you seem to be the right guy to answer this. What would drive a man to, well, I mean, maybe this isn't the right question, but let's try it anyway. What would drive a man to give up what he was good at? And if I remember this correctly, and I might be off on this, that Madden has the highest winning percentage as a coach in football. In the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I believe he has the highest winning percentage. He was really, really good at what he did. Al Davis took a chance on him in the early 60s to coach his Raiders. He was 31, 32 when he started coaching that, took them to the precipice. And I think he should have won a couple, three Super Bowls if it wasn't for the Steelers, definitely. Winning a Super Bowl. Doing it with players that were outside the norm of NFL, Kenny Stabler's one of them, you know, that type of player. They were just the Raiders type player. Going from what he was really good at to trying something new to becoming one of my favorite, if not probably the best color commentators I've ever heard. Wonder what drove a man to do that. Do you have any idea?
Oh, yeah, he coached for 10 years. He had 103 victories, you're right, more than anybody else, highest winning percentage. He took the Raiders to the AFC Championship game 7 times, only won once, and he had some tough competition in the Steelers and the Miami Dolphins in those days. Don't forget the Dolphins went to 3 straight Super Bowls, too.
Yeah, and
And
that was did they play? Was that one of the games that he played against them? Was that during their perfect season? Is that correct? Okay. Okay.
And what got him to retire at the age of 42 was he had bleeding ulcers, and the stress was killing him. And his wife said to him, John, we all love you, we all love the Raiders, but we need you more. And he announced his retirement. They held a press conference, and he said, I'm never going to coach again. And he didn't. And, you know, in the beginning with CBS, he was pretty mediocre. When they gave him that 4 or 5 game contract, he really didn't know how to be an analyst, and they didn't help him any. I was there. Nobody said, watch these tapes. Do it this way. You know, you got to come in after the play-by-play guy sets up the wide receivers on the left, the tight ends on the right, et cetera. And then you got to get out in time for us to go to commercial. Nobody told him anything. And he had to kind of learn it on his own. And those first 4 or 5 games, they didn't go back to New York. They only went back to the two cities, where the teams were coming from, like Tampa Bay and Minnesota Vikings, that only went back to the Tampa area and the Twin City area. And Madden was just learning on the job, and eventually, he almost got fired at the end of his first year, But he did something at a Super Bowl luncheon that was so entertaining in front of 500 people there that the CBS executives no longer saw him as another coach who wanted to be an analyst, a broadcaster. They saw him for what he could be. And they gave him another chance. The second year, they paired him with Gary Bender and the same director and producer. Unlike the first year, he kept getting different people. So he was able to get in a pattern, to get in a flow. And he did much better, but he still wasn't the John Madden we all grew to love until he was paired with Pat Summerall. Once they got together in 1981, it was like peanut butter and jelly meeting for the first time. They ended each other's sentences. They had tremendous love and respect for each other because they both played the game. They both loved the game. And Summerall made room for John Madden to be John Madden. Summerall cut his announcing short, just kept it as brief as possible so John could tell his stories. And they were just a perfect team.
The one thing I remember about that is growing up not knowing football very well. Those two allowed me to learn football from not only X's and O's, but from, you have the guy on the ground, but you also have the guy from up above explaining things. And most people today, if you're talking to people probably 20 years younger than me, know Madden from the video game. But there's a reason why the video game became the video game is because of his coaching and his play-by-play abilities. So I'm very grateful that a guy like CBS gave a guy like Madden a chance because I don't think that NFL would be the same thing that it is today without John Madden and Pat Summerall being in the booth.
I agree with you 100%. Madden had this unique ability to take a product. Now, Miller Lite started running his commercials in 1980, where he was bursting through the wall at the bar and going up to the bartender and saying "Tastes great" or "Less filling" or whatever. And everybody loved those commercials. In fact, that's one of the reasons he was chosen in 1980 to become the number one analyst for the 81 season when CBS had the Super Bowl. He had this unique ability to take a product, whether it be Miller Lite or the video game or a broadcast, take a product that already existed and lift it to new heights. He didn't invent these things, but he certainly made them infinitely better. And America loved him for it. They loved everything he did.
Let me ask you something. We got a couple more minutes. I do appreciate you coming on at this short of a notice. I really, for the years, I've read books about him, and then your book is on my list to read next. And I apologize for not having read it, but it's just life has gotten in the way. I do know that with somebody with your background, and I've read your background and you've explained it, you had a close tie with him. You have this person who is on Mount Rushmore of the NFL. If people know anybody, a little bit old, they know John Madden. I've got to know this. Was he as genuine a man as he appears to be? Was he as real as he appears to be?
Absolutely, yes. I'll give you an example. They went to Washington, D.C. early in his broadcasting career for a game. And when he gets to the hotel, there's a note there from Ethel Kennedy, the widow of Robert F. Kennedy, and who was the brother of JFK. And the note said, "John, we're big fans of yours. We'd love to have lunch or dinner with you this weekend while you're here in Washington." And one of the kid associates working with him said, looked up at him and said, "John, wow, are you going to have dinner with Ethel Kennedy?" And John looked at him and thought for a second. He said, "Nah, I'm going to have Mexican food with you guys." And that's the kind of guy John Maverick. He would rather hang with the crew and be with people who he loved. What he would get to a game site early, he'd sit in the hotel lobby and he'd talk to everybody in the hotel. He wanted to know where they were from, what their jobs were like. He wanted to know. He had this insatiable curiosity. And he won 16 Emmy Awards, but he loved his partner, Pat Summerall. And they worked together fabulously well. And when Pat died, Madden said at his funeral, "There were voices before Pat Summerall, and there'll be voices after him, but Pat's was the voice of the NFL." And it's kind of like you said earlier, Jeremy, when he came on the air at 1 o'clock, you knew it was a big game.
I'm telling you this, that there are certain things that I remember growing up. Coach Lee retiring, Corso. It was one of the saddest and the most beautiful moments. This past couple weeks ago, when he picked the Ohio State Buckeyes to win, with the helmet.
Right.
And I was telling people, it's like Ohio State could not lose that game and still remain a franchise. You just couldn't. But I remember watching him growing up and waiting for him to be as goofy, but as good as he is. When Pat Summerall retired, and I believe he retired a few years before Madden did, seeing those two broke up was kind of, just because of on air, everything I could remember, it was rough. And it was like part of your childhood, part of the things that you were used to on a consistent basis was gone. You think, well, how in the world could a commentator be that way? But like I said, it was when I knew football, it was because of those two men. And then when it took, and I know you're a lot closer to him than me, obviously. But taking so long for John Madden to be in the Hall of Fame was a crime. Was a crime.
A lot of the voters thought, well, Al Davis was pulling the strings. And that's why it took him so long. But finally, they put him in that when they realized that all the great coaches already in the Hall of Fame, from the Steelers and Don Shula and George Allen and Hank Stram, all those great coaches who were Super Bowl winners, Madden had an incredible winning record against them. And that's what helped convince the voters to put him in. One quick story. 1981, CBS had a new producer named Terry O'Neill to take over NFL production. And he is as much responsible for pairing Madden with Summerall. And he convinced CBS to hire broadcast associates, they were called. Basically, they were kids out of college. They were like runners, and they were there to learn the business and later on become producers and directors themselves. One of those kids is Richie Zients. Richie Zients today is Fox's lead producer. He's Tom Brady's producer, and he's been with Fox for a long time. But in 81, he was the guy assigned to work with John Madden. And one day Madden says, there's this young lady that she works in real estate. She keeps coming in with her boss trying to sell me something, and I think you might like her when you come out here to do a game. You should meet her. Her name is June. And so he became a matchmaker, and he fixed up Richie Zients with June, and they go out on a date to a game, and when the game was over, Madden got in touch with June and said, "How did it go?" And she said, "Not so good." "Well, why is that?" John said. "Well, he left every 15 minutes to go call sports phone to find out of the Mets score, and so all he cared about was the Mets. So that's why I don't think the date went so well." And Madden said, "What a jerk!" And he gave the whole of science, and he said, "You better get back in touch with her and do a little bit better next time." Well, they wound up getting married, and the wedding was at John Madden's house, and all the people from CBS came out, and Madden hosted it. I mean, Madden would, if he liked you and you were loyal, there was nobody more loyal to anyone than John Madden, and what a guy he was.
Do you feel, and well, I'll have to leave on this. I was explaining that I'm having a lot of trouble with respiratory problems right now. Talking hurts a little bit. And I do appreciate you coming on at this short of a notice. Thank you so much. Love these stories. Madden is one of the guys that Pat Summerall too, but those are two of the guys that I just love hearing stories about. If there is one story to you, the story you just told me tells me exactly the man that I hoped he was. But if there is one story that you can leave us about Madden, about John Madden, that explains to us how you feel about him, why you like him so much, what would it be?
Back in I guess it was 1980 or 81 when he was doing the Miller Lite commercials, I came to realize that he would be a perfect candidate to go on the Johnny Carson show or the show after that, the Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder. And I took it on my own to call the bookers for those shows. And Tom Snyder show said, "Yeah, we'd love to have him on." So I took him over to the NBC studios down the block from CBS, and they taped at 5 o'clock. Excuse me. And so he goes on with Tom Snyder, and he does his routine, and he was unbelievably funny. And we leave afterwards, and I said, "You want to go grab a bite at Runyon's or someplace?" He said, "Nah, get in this limo with me." And there was a limo waiting for us, and he never took a limo. And the limo was from Miller Lite. And he said, "We're going to Tavern on the Green. Miller Lite is having a big reunion with all their ex-players that they use for the commercials, and it's going to be a raucous ball. We have the Crystal Room all to ourselves." And Rodney Dangerfield was there, and all those great players, and it was hysterical. I felt like I was a fly on the wall. I couldn't believe he brought me along. That's the kind of guy he was. He was so loyal. He appreciated the fact that I was not only working for him and with him, but that I was his friend.
He that that's I remember him going through the walls for the Miller Lite commercials. I love those things. Didn't get it at the time. Now I get it, how awesome it was. And the turducken, explaining the turducken on Thanksgiving Day just made Thanksgiving what it was. Where can we find your book, my friend?
You can find it at Barnes and Noble and especially on Amazon. All you have to do is put in Madden and Summerall in the top, and the book will pop up. It's available for pre-order right now. It'll be released on Tuesday, the 16th. If you order it now, it'll actually get to you on Tuesday.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Richard, for coming on. And I appreciate, again, the short notice and the changes of timing. You are an amazing guest with amazing story. And I got your book ready to read, and I'm looking forward to reading it as well.
Thanks again, Jeremy.
All right. Thank you all for listening to Football's Family Podcast.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.